This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dirt and Spray.
Mahone, and he gets it easily. Touchdown, Boise State. The Broncos have the lead, 19 straight points.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Spray.
Nix snap back to throw once more. Swings it toward the corner of the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown, Auburn. Tell me it cannot happen again.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Two in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson, ready to go on this Labor Day.
Laboring on Labor Day. Let's use that joke, huh? Get it out of the way 1 minute into the segment.
Ba-doom-tsh.
We're here laboring on Labor Day. Two things need to be taken care of. One, can somebody please text in and tell me what the hell is going on at Oaks Park today? Because there is like a miles long backup on both sides of the Selwood Bridge. I'm like cruising.
Is Damian Lillard roller skating again?
There's no traffic anywhere. Nobody's on the roads. I'm flying around. And then to get over the Selwood Bridge, like there was just like it was Manhattan.
My guess is there's either a super good deal on Groupon or something like that.
And for people to go ride the rides on Labor Day.
Or something else is going on and we have no clue because when I Googled Oaks Park, nothing popped up.
Okay. Well,
outside of their website.
Somebody help me out there because I was pissed off and now I have to take a different route home. The other thing that we need to start the show with today, what do you need to ratify the Constitution, right? It's got to pass the House, the Senate, and two-thirds of the states have to approve it,
correct? That's correct.
Yeah. I am pleased to announce on this Monday, September 2nd, that's the day today, Monday, September 2nd at 12:03. I have submitted a bill, and it has been approved by the House, it has been approved by the Senate, and it has been passed by two-thirds of the states. They've all voted to update the Dirt and Sprague Constitution.
Yeah, here we go. I know what it is.
There's a new law. There's a new law out
there. Tell me the law.
And it's not about White Claws, but there is a law as it applies to the show. And that law now states that you, Brandon Sprague, my wonderful co-host of 7 years, been working together for a long time, doing a show together. We have a great time, yeah. Good camaraderie. Love our jobs. You are officially restricted from doing one thing.
Yep.
And that is, if my team is ever playing a game, I don't care what sport it is. I don't care what the score is.
Oh,
it does
man.
Not matter to me. It could be the first quarter, halftime, fourth quarter. It does not matter. During the course of a game that my team is involved in.
Yes.
You are officially, according to the Dirt and Spray Constitution, banned from texting me about that team.
I can't even believe it. They stink okay. So bad you can't even make it up.
Like people have been racking their brains now for the last 48 hours trying to figure out how Oregon blew a 21-6 lead in the second half. And there's a lot of blame to go around,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I don't
Everybody's
know about that
been
one.
Trying to figure it out.
Mm.
And they're all pointing the wrong fingers.
It's me.
Because
it is Brandon Sprague at Saturday at 5:23 Pacific.
Yeah.
Jason Swigard texted our show group chat.
Yeah.
In a very harmlessly said, this is a different Justin Herbert. Wow.
Well, the fourth quarter came and it wasn't.
If you're wondering at what time of the game it was, that was when Oregon took a 14-3 lead in the first quarter. We just said, different Justin Herbert.
Yep.
Wow. At 5:24, 1 minute later, Brandon Sprague responds, Ducks plus 3.5 was easy money. Now, if you wonder why this is such a big issue for me, this is now the third time this has happened to me. This is number three, okay?
Wait, what was the second one?
Let's go back in the time machine to the 2016 NLDS, Game 4 against the Cubs. The Giants on the brink of forcing a Game 5 and having all the momentum in the series. It was 5-0 going into the top of the ninth inning. They were in complete control. Sprague texts me and says, your team's going to do it, aren't they? They're going to win another World Series. Here they come. You know what happened at the top of the ninth? The Cubs scored 6 runs. They won the game. The series was over. The Giants haven't been back to the playoffs since.
I just asked a question. I didn't even pick anybody there. That's just a question.
And then time number two was last year against Stanford, in which the group chat was going off about how good Oregon looked. And wow, what a statement win. And here they come. And then they unraveled in the second half. So that is it's a new rule. It's a new bylaw. Yeah. You are no longer allowed to text me about my team when they're playing the game.
Look, the reality is this. The Sprague jinx may be a real thing. I started 0-for-3 on Sprague and Line. That was great.
Ooh, that's not good.
Nebraska minus 22 first half. Yeah, they were up 7.
Wow, that's a bold first half line.
South Alabama?
I mean, hey, you never know.
They were talking about not wanting to play Adrian Martinez at all in the second half. I thought, okay, they're going to open it up.
We're off to a good start.
Ducks up 21-6, 4 minutes left from the third. I think, oh, well, they should be up 35-6. I'm feeling great about this one.
Feeling great.
No.
Didn't happen.
No. What was the third one that I even picked? I didn't even remember the third pick, but I know when I saw it, I was like, oh
great.
Beautiful. Great start for me.
That was the only saving
grace. Ohio State minus 27.5.
Oh, and they were up like 42-0 a minute into that game.
Yeah. And then they quit. Then they quit. But even with that said, I will allow you to put your frustrations.
Thank you. You flew out there. Yes. Let me take my blame out on you, please.
You got flight delayed.
Yes, we did Friday. It was a nightmare.
You had to eat super late at night on a beautiful looking meal that probably ended up making you have to take a massive dump early in the morning.
Yeah. The Saturday morning was a rough start today after 12:30 a.m. barbecue.
You're playing in a stadium that the last time your team was there, they lost to an SEC team.
No, Big Ten. Thank you. They lost in the national championship in that stadium as well. They also lost to LSU in that stadium.
That
was in Dallas.
I didn't know the Ohio State game.
They've played
there.
Two games there, and they lost both of them. Now let's make it 3.
Let's see. What else? Oh, they got off to a great start.
They did. So you mentally allow yourself to go to a place that they're going to win the game.
You're ready for SEC trash talk.
I had my tweet already.
I bet you did.
I had my tweet ready.
Tell us the tweet.
My post-game tweet was going to be just me typing, me walking into the office Monday, and then like a pimp walk, like a gif of a guy doing a pimp walk.
That's it, huh?
I mean, yeah, I wasn't going to go too
hard. No trash talk at the SEC?
I was going to go light there. I was going to go light there. But yeah, it was all ready. It was all ready to go.
But anyways, my point is I'm going to allow you to put this all on me.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm sorry I responded in such manner.
You could just say in the future, like, man, Oregon looks good. Or, hey, what a good start.
But I do believe this. I do believe everybody felt how I felt when I sent that text.
Oh, they for sure did.
Right?
Yeah, it was 14-3, and it should have been 21-3.
I mean, they clearly looked like a better team.
They did, yeah.
It wasn't even controversial to say Oregon is out-muscling and out-footballing the hell out of Auburn right now.
They dominated the first half, and if you have somebody catch a ball in the back of the end zone and you don't fumble a handoff, that is likely a 28-3 score at the half.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I don't know where I'm presuming you sat where I kept seeing pictures tweeted. Coming up on the pregame.
Yeah, we had our own
right
booth,
there?
Which was kick ass.
Oh, yeah, for the whole game.
We had our own booth.
Boy, you're a spoiled little brat.
Yeah. The company paid a lot for it, but.
Bitching and moaning at me. You got your own booth. You got sweets over there at Jerry World.
The food was delicious, too, by the way.
I didn't think the angle of the fumble was very good. My assumption is that was Herbert. But I couldn't tell on the angle of the play call. Did you get a clean look?
No, I got the sense that...
It looked like he tried to pull away a little too late, whereas they tried to do that a little earlier in their system.
Which makes you think it was an RPO of some sort.
Right.
Yeah.
Because most of the time when they're doing those plays, you know this, with Arroyo and what we've seen in Cristobal for a season and a game now, their RPO isn't even necessarily like a real RPO. It's more like a play action thing where he just shows it real quick and then tucks it to pass.
Which is a whole other topic because I would like to see them have Herbert pull it and run more because it's there quite often.
And on that particular play, it looked like that was an actual RPO. Like it was his decision to let it go or keep it. And I don't know, it was caught in an in-between of, Well, he could run it. Well, I could run it. Well, he could run
right,
it.
Right, you take it. No, I take it.
And
no,
then the guy was super close to him, so it was a bad combination of things.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that was the look I
I'm sorry that I caused the fumble.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. I'm sorry that I made Addison drop that pass in the end zone.
You did. You made him drop the pass. You made the...
I'm sorry the defense withered in the second half and the fourth quarter because their offense did next to nothing their last five possessions. That's all my fault.
That's all I'm looking for today. I appreciate your apology. And now we have ratified the constitution of the show and we can move on.
If you guys need me, Duck fans out there, if you need me to be your Robin Williams and you be Matt Damon in Good Will Hunting...
Yeah, I'm going to take the anger out on you.
You shove me.
Let me deflect, baby.
As long as this ends with a hug. Okay?
I mean, we're probably not going to hug today, but...
Duck fan already was a little frustrated by a poll question I put up Friday.
Oh, I saw it. Oh, yeah.
Did you think it was Beaver-leaning? I was more just going the aspect of, do you feel like you guys are as confident as you once were, but...
Yeah, I think when you... Yeah.
I guess it doesn't help that I was doing a solo show and then
Swigard's with you doing his beaver calls over there in the other studio.
Well, and then I did the show questions late and I didn't do a follow up. Who will just win, Oregon or Auburn? So they probably like, oh, they're only going at the negative thing here.
I think when you use the word cocky, people view it negatively. If you would have said, Oregon fan, are you as confident as you were during the Chip Kelly era,
right.
I think it would have been viewed slightly different.
Hey, yeah.
But yeah, the cockiness is gone. They haven't, you know.
But what do you call your sports version of you when your teams are winning?
I'm a cocky sports fan.
Cocky dirt.
Yeah.
I just figured that was like it's not a derogatory thing. It's just you're cocky. Everybody gets cocky when their team starts winning.
Somebody, RJ asked, was Spray calling timeouts as well? He was. Thank you for not knowing the rule that if you get hurt, you can't go back in the game.
That's a good point. I blew two timeouts back to back.
Read the damn rule book, dude. God. Let me down left and right.
Well, I'm glad you made it there and back in one piece. You didn't get in a fight with anybody from the Auburn side. I heard your postgame, actually. I heard like 20 minutes of your postgame show.
Hey, thanks, man.
You were the most optimistic sounding individual on that postgame show.
Yeah, it
took... And that's hard to beat Dusty in that department.
Yeah, it took, I'd say after the game ended, there was probably a good 25 minutes of silence. Now, it was just Anthony, Dusty, and I sitting with our engineer, Alex. It was awesome. It was just the four of us. We had our own booth, and there was a good 20 to 25 minutes of dead silence. And then, you know, you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and you say, let's get after this thing.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of season left, man.
Oh, there's a ton. You have 11 more games.
11 more games, man.
Yeah, it sucks because that's your reputation or your first glimpse into who people think you are going to be. That does suck. But they very well could win the next 11 in a row for all we know. And then people are like, well, we almost could have been 12-0.
What could have been?
We're 11-1, and maybe you're sitting in a good spot. All right, let's find out what's on tap for today's show.
Dirt and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right.
There's a lot of sporting events you say, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
What's on tap? Brought to you in the Fan by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach, online at pelicanbrewing.com. Was out there yesterday. Perfect weather. 71, no wind. Felt like it was 85. Nice to see old Pelican buddies out there, too. We'll get to the Ducks-Auburn game some more coming up. Tyson Alger's going to join us for the Daily Ticker. We'll get his thoughts from that game. I was wrestling dirt with... when you get big games like that, you want to run away with, like, the hard-hitting opinion. There's only one opinion that I care about.
Right.
But I had, like, three or four, so...
Yeah, there's a lot of angles out of that game.
I don't think there's one in particular angle you can take. So we'll get into that today. We got our NFL whip around. Give you an update on all the cuts that went down. Not particularly great for Ducks and Beavers. We have the Jadeveon Clowney trade and Laramie Tunzel to talk about as well. And then we're going to get to the Oregon State game. Who do I get to blame? Who's my Robin Williams today? Do I get one?
Yeah, you can take your blame out on somebody.
Okay. I don't know who it is.
It might be yourself because you did say they were going to cover the spread.
Well, if you got it at 16.5, they did.
I'm kicking my own ass!
Do you mind? When I saw that thing at 17 in July, why didn't I bet then?
You should have. You should have pounced on it immediately. And then Tristan Jebbia would be your hero for scoring a touchdown with like 1:08 left.
Well, and they easily covered the over that game.
Yeah, that was the no-brainer.
So we'll get to that. We got the Pac-12 weekend that was, and it wasn't particularly strong.
No, not a great start for the old P-12.
But I'm going to flip it on you.
Okay.
I'm going to flip it in a way that nobody else is.
Okay.
Okay? We got crunch time to get to. I do want to talk about some other national college football storylines. And then probably in the 2 o'clock hour, we'll get back into the Ducks and Beavers. I don't know who's working today. I don't know who's on the road, who's not on the road. This is always a weird day, in my opinion.
Anybody else laboring on Labor Day?
I mean, I got here in 10 minutes. That never happens. Yeah. So that kind of gives me a glimpse. So we'll bring back some Oregon State stuff in the final hour for those who are just coming back into town or maybe running some errands today, enjoying a nice Labor Day off. And we'll start with the Ducks and Auburn. What's your big takeaway? Oregon and Auburn. We'll start there. Dirt and Sprague with you on 1080 The Fan. All right, 12:18. Welcome back in. Let's dive into it. Oregon was up 21-6 with 4 minutes to go in the third quarter. Bo Nix looked like absolute dog ass. Auburn's offense looked boring, predictable. Oregon's defense was flying around. I thought Thomas Graham had a really good game.
Mm-hmm. Javon Holland was probably Javon the best Holland. Player on the field, to be honest with you.
I guarantee nobody's kicking to that kid this year.
No, he's a monster, and he might be the best safety in the Pac-12. He's going to be a stud, and he's still got another year left, thank God.
So they had some really bright spots moving for them. Offensively, they were doing some stuff, and then Auburn couldn't move the ball whatsoever. Well, that quickly changed in the third quarter. They scored a touchdown, and then they were the only ones to score in the fourth. They got 14, including the game-winning touchdown, with about 9 seconds to go. Just, you know, one more, I think, before they were going to kick a field goal. Let's see if we can get it in.
Yeah, last play.
And then hopefully tie the game. Or no, what would it have been that
point? It was 21-20, so a field goal would have won it as well. But the kicker had missed one earlier, and they were, I want to say, around the 30-something yard line. So it wouldn't have been a gimme necessarily.
No way. Not with a college kicker, especially considering we saw the Oregon kicker miss from 5 yards out.
I think 2 yards out.
Nothing's a given.
Yeah.
But 21-27, Auburn ends up coming back, and they get the win. The Pac-12 falls 0-1 on the national stage, and Oregon 0-1 on the season.
Well, I mean, it's heartbreak because it feels like you've been there before. They lost to Auburn in the national championship game on the last play. It was a field goal. The game was tied 19-19. Dyer got down to the 2 yard line. They kick the field goal and you lose at the end. And I know this wasn't technically the last play of the game, but you give up a touchdown with 9 seconds left like that. I mean, it's a knife in the back because, as we just mentioned, there's no guarantee that they miss the field goal. And if you make a play there, if he underthrows it, if he overthrows it, Oregon, we could easily be sitting here talking about being 1-0. The reality is when you blow a game or you blow a lead that's 21-6 and you're in control early in the third quarter, it takes a number of different reasons in order to blow that game. And that's the thing I think is most frustrating. There's two things that are frustrating out of it. One is trying to pin it on one singular factor, which just isn't necessarily true. And then the other segment that I've seen of people saying essentially the year is over and what a disappointment, Oregon crapped the bed again, now they have nothing to play for. And I disagree strongly with both of those stances. When you blow a lead like that, you look back, I think, initially to the mistakes that the players made. We'll get to the coaching. I know that's going to be an ongoing conversation, and it wasn't great, especially in the second half. But the players are the ones out there making plays. You dropped a touchdown pass in the back of the end zone that would have made that game 14-0 in the first quarter. And instead of catching that pass, you dropped it. It's fourth down. Then you miss a chip shot field goal. So instead of it being 14-0 or 10-0, it's 7-0. And then Auburn kicks a field goal and it's 7-6. It's almost a 10-point swing. Then you get Javon Holland, who we just mentioned, a dynamite punt returner, takes you down inside the 10-yard line. And at that moment of the game, I think most people thought, here we go. Like, there could be a rout on it. It's 14-3. It should be 21-3. But nonetheless, it's a 14-3 game, and you fumble the first play of that drive. Auburn picks it up. A hell of a play to chase down the end of it by Addison, who tackled him at the 2 because it ended up holding Auburn to a field goal. But again, that's a 10-point swing. Instead of it being 21-3 or potentially at that point 28-3, you allow Auburn to be in the game at 14-6. And if we know anything about sports, Auburn is a good football team. And if you allow a good football team to hang around, to feel like they have hope, to give them extra chances, eventually it's going to bite you. It's the old Denny Green. They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook. And in the second half, Oregon let them off the hook. They didn't put the kill shot in when they needed to, and here we are. They didn't take advantage of opportunities.
Yeah, I think you could look at a few different moments of momentum turn, and I think the biggest one that I wrote down, because I took notes this weekend on some stuff, and the biggest one was easily for me, was the fumble that led to the getting down to the 2 or whatever yard line and allowing Auburn another opportunity to score and cut within the lead versus pushing it to 28-6.
And it was a phenomenal stop by the defense to not allow them to score a touchdown. They had the ball first and goal at the 2 yard line and held them to a field goal.
I thought the defense up until even that, that was probably the moment for the entire team, really, if you break it down, because the offense is so close to putting this, it would have been done. They're not coming back from 28-6. That's ball game there.
Yeah, they would have had to throw in the ball the entire second half with a quarterback who couldn't consistently complete passes.
And yeah, he made a good throw on the last play. Yeah. I get it, the clutch stuff. That kid was not throwing them back in the game from 28-6,
right? He played a true freshman like we thought he would.
And let me just throw this out here before we dive into more opinions. I'm an Oregon State alum. I don't even root for Oregon, so get the dunk honk stuff out of your system now. I thought that was the pivotal moment because not only did the offense blow an opportunity and a chance to go up 28-6, then your defense held them, and then your offense proceeded to do nothing, and then what did that do to your defense?
Yeah, you punted the last two or three drives of the first half. It really threw them into a funk.
This is the end of the second quarter, so here we go. Touchdown 21-6. After that, punt, 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 downs, punt, end of game.
Yeah.
There it is. Those are your last 5.5 possessions. I'm not even going to count the last one. It was one throw, whatever.
Yeah, it was a Hail Mary throughout the
end zone. Last 5 possessions were incredibly terrible, and that's going to do nothing but just put more pressure on your defense. You had a nice little 9-play drive to get you to 21, and then 3 plays, 5 plays, 3 plays. You had one that got to 8, and then you turned that over on downs, and then 5. Yeah. The quickness in which your possessions win as well. 3 minutes, 1 minute, 2 minute, 1 minute, 2 minute. Your 8-play drive was 4 minutes.
Yeah.
That was the longest your defense got to rest. That moment changed the entirety of the game because your offense then kind of got in their own head. Auburn got confidence with that play. Their defense was then put in a bad position and they couldn't get a stop to save their life, thus setting up what potentially happened. There's a lot of opinions I have on this game. That's not the overall opinion.
Sure.
But I think to your point, that was the moment for me. I know I wrote it in my phone. I was like,
there it is.
Game changer.
Not take advantage? And the defense was phenomenal throughout the course of the game. But eventually a defense is going to break down when you leave them on the field the entire half. And that happened in the second half. You can't ask them to get stops every single time Auburn gets the ball.
No, no doubt about it. Because Auburn might not be the best SEC team, but you know what they still are? A lot of 4- and 5-star players. Those are still really damn good football players. But because they're not Bama, we think it's almost like a joke that you don't get stops. Where I think they kind of go hand in hand in college sometimes, man, where the offense does nothing. The defense is out there 1 minute later. And it's like, okay, great. Can't wait to get another stop.
Right.
It wears on you. You know, the drop touchdown pass, I do want to give my thoughts on that quick. Should you catch it? Yes. Whenever your two hands touch the ball and you catch it. He was running, though, at a weird angle, and Herbert hit him just a little behind. Anybody that's played football, you've had a catch where you dropped it.
Yeah, it didn't hit him flat in the hands like he was wide open and there was nobody around him. It would have been a difficult catch, but you got to make it.
You got to make it. It's inexcusable to drop it, but I think you look at it, and I place the fumble more on high. Okay, that really screwed you more so than that play. It's not like Addison is looked at as this one or even number two on their receiving core.
No, he shouldn't have been playing.
Juwan Johnson, which shout out to Oregon being just great with their injury reports. Everybody by all accord was going to play in terms of Juwan Johnson. That's what everybody was saying. And then Saturday, he just goes out there in slides and sweatpants. And you told me that you guys found out before the game from somebody that's like, oh, he's not going to play today. Like, okay, so that's a pretty big blow to the offense as well. Not even having Juwan Johnson or Micah Pittman out there. And then you look to Addison and, yeah, you hope that kid can catch that ball, but sometimes those aren't easy. That fumble to me was probably the play for them that changed the tide of the entire thing.
Yeah, it really did. And when you have the momentum in a football game, you have to capitalize on it. You know, it was reminiscent, I think, because of the fumble, because of what happened against Stanford. You were knocking on the doorstep last year to score that touchdown. That was the nail in the coffin. That was it. And remember what happened? They hiked it over Herbert's head. Stanford picked it up and ran it 95 yards back the other direction for a touchdown. And you just breathe life into that football team. And all of a sudden, okay, I guess we have ourselves a game. How the hell did that happen? I don't know. But that's exactly what took place in the second quarter against Auburn. And really, from that point on, Oregon's offense wasn't the same. I think they questioned themselves confidence-wise a little bit. And then Auburn made a lot of adjustments in the second half that made things difficult for Oregon to consistently move the ball. And I think that's where you get to the coaching angle of it. But it's not easy when you don't have your top two targets on the outside. And we knew they were going to miss Micah Pittman. When I found out before the game that Juwan Johnson wasn't playing, you just gulped, because here we go. They don't have consistent number one wide receivers. They don't have guys that can create space. I thought Johnny Johnson had a good game. I thought Jalen Redd had a good game. They both upped their level of play.
C.J. Verdell was good out of the backfield, too.
C.J. Verdell was good out of the backfield, catching the ball as well. But the reality of those guys is they're slot wide receivers. Johnny Johnson and Jalen Redd are not your number one go-to target on the outside. And when you take that away and you make them be your go-to guy on the outside, you're going to be somewhat limited once Auburn made adjustments in the second half, and they were.
All right, we'll have more thoughts on this. I got a whole lot more to get to with coaching, Justin Herbert, and all of that stuff. But before we get to that, we will talk with Tyson Alger, who was also at the game for The Athletic. He's going to join us next.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. 12:33 on Portland's number one sports radio station, 1080 The Fan. Hope you guys are enjoying your Labor Day, relaxing, lounging. Maybe some of you guys are working, making some extra scratch. But we're talking Oregon and Auburn right now. We talked about Auburn coming back in the last segment. So let's bring on good friend of the show, Tyson Alger of The Athletic, joining us now.
We attacked the buffet at AT&T Stadium together.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, we dominated that dojo.
Who came out victorious, you or Tyson?
I mean, I'd probably say me.
Oh. Yeah. Tyson, do you agree with that?
I mean, he wiped the floor with me on the barbecue, on the food spread. It was it was like Auburn coming down on that final drive.
Oh no, you got Bo Nix. That doesn't help.
He did.
You know, I was reading your Sunday Thoughts article, and you know, I love the way you attacked the three or four different areas of things. I just want to start with this one. There's no doubting the recruiting prowess of him, the intensity, the commitment, the passion. Is it fair to question Mario Cristobal yet, or is it still too early in your opinion in the tenure?
Yeah, that's an awfully tricky one, because it's so early in the tenure, and there's so much other stuff that they do right. Where, you know, I think it's fair to question whether or not the very specifics of certain on field things are his strongest suit. And I think it's not fair to be like, you know, I had this in my my story of like, there's a big narrative of, can these coaches coach? And it's like, well, of course they can coach. It's just how good at this level are they? And, you know, I think it's still way too much of a small sample size, but you know, we've seen, you know, a couple issues arise in these 13, 14 games so far with like, you know, this Cristobal regime, and you know, whether it be from clock management or just certain decisions. And I'm not a huge questioning exactly what they called in certain situations, because, you know, we don't know every little particular circumstance. Mm-hmm. But that was a tough one to swallow, especially for the amount of eyeballs on that game, because this Oregon program has been doing so much right over the last, pretty much since the time Cristobal took over, that everything's going to be under the microscope, especially in that sort of atmosphere.
Right, a big game like that. And I think the other coach that's getting probably the most heat, and this has been really the case going all the way back to last year, is Marcus Arroyo. When you have a second half in which your last basically 5.5 possessions of the game, you're not able to do much, not able to move the ball consistently. Some thought he was too aggressive and then too conservative. And the play caller is always going to get the majority of the blame, no matter what level of football we're talking about. But how did you feel about Arroyo's performance and then his decision to either be aggressive or too conservative in the second half?
You know, Arroyo's just got to be scratching his head and be like, okay, like all last year, you guys were telling me I was too conservative, and now you're just telling me that I'm too aggressive. You know, I was so impressed with the way that they did those first three drives. I thought that the plays were creative. I thought they were getting guys open in space and all those sorts of things. You know, ultimately what I think kind of caught up with Oregon, I think the fact that they had a lot of their playmakers out of this game, really kind of caught up to them, and that this Auburn defense, which was kind of caught off guard by kind of the early part of that game, they got comfortable and they started playing like that Auburn defense that we had been talking about for the last 8 months. Like, this was a really good team. And once they were able to kind of realize that Oregon wasn't going to be able to mix that kind of long ball in there, they were able to crack down on a lot of the shorter yardage stuff. And that really stuffed up that running game. If you look at the first three drives, Oregon was doing its best when they were kind of mixing in a lot of play action. I think that's when they had that 40, 45-yard completion to Johnny Johnson. It's because there was a threat of a run there. And when that completely imploded in the second half, I think that just really killed a lot of their options. But I do think that you can go and look at, I think it was that first drive in the fourth quarter when they ran on third and seven with C.J. Burdell. I think that's one that's gotten a lot of criticism. And, you know, I don't know what they were – seen there, but that seemed like kind of like almost like they were punting on that possession.
Yeah, that's always one of the tough ones, though, isn't it? It's like, that seems like such a bad play in the moment, but then there's that other part of me in the back of my head that thinks, what if he thought he'd catch him way off guard, never expecting a run on third and seven? I think that's the life of an offensive coordinator, basically down to a T. We're talking with Tyson Alger of the Athletic, Oregon Duck beat writer. Look, there is a lot of negatives you could point out. You don't want to blow a 21-6 lead, and it's kind of our jobs to give the opinions, and some people get mad at those opinions. But I think one positive that I took away, and this isn't good for me and my Oregon State Beavers, I think Oregon's scary as hell in the Pac-12, because if you compare it to other Pac-12 performances, Washington beat a team that they should have wiped the floor with. Washington State did the same thing. Stanford barely beat Northwestern, and God, I don't even know how they covered that point spread at the end there. USC's quarterback is now gone. You break down this conference, Tyson. Utah looked impressive against BYU. Ultimately, though, I still look at Oregon and say they were up 21-6 on Auburn. How many other teams in this conference would be able to say that? Washington couldn't do that last year. So I actually walked away still encouraged that this season is obviously far from over with 11 games left. But I also don't know how many teams can even stack up talent-wise with them, even if they don't have all those wide receivers.
Well, that's definitely the thing. Like, once you get a little bit further away from just the kind of the dramatics of the actual loss, is you start to look at that thing. And the one thing that Oregon needs to fix is fixable. You know, they can get better at play calling. They can get better at just kind of game management and that sort of thing. I would be so much more concerned if this was just an instance where Oregon was just out-talented in that game. Mm-hmm. Oregon has the most important thing that it needs right now, and it's talent. That roster up to, like, defense, offense, everything looked really good in that game. And that's the most important thing that they need in this conference. And I came away feeling better about their chances in the Pac-12, despite the loss, than I felt even before going into that game. I think Oregon looks like the best team in the Pac-12 right now, which is weird to say coming off of a loss, but as long as they don't get in their own way, I don't see any team in the conference, maybe other than Washington's hard to tell just because they played an FCS team, and it's hard to tell whether or not the smoke, I mean, you know, whether Eason had a big game for them, but it's hard to tell whether or not that smoke and mirrors just based on the opponent. But I think it kind of further implemented the fact that Oregon and Washington are kind of the two teams at the class of the conference right now.
Yeah. The other encouraging part I took away as well was the performance of some of the younger guys. Like, Penei Sewell had some incredible highlights, just pancaking dudes. You had a tweet about Javon Hall that I agreed with, just in the performance that he had. And I know Cristobal today called him the player of the game. What did you make of some of the younger guys, including the freshmen who Oregon fans got a chance to see for the first time from that highly touted recruiting class?
Yeah, man, I was watching some kind of like isolated clips of Sewell this morning, and he was just manhandling dudes. You know, he's everything that we said he was last year, and he's in better shape this year. And he's going to be a first round pick either next year or the year after. He's a really good player. Holland, I think I can't think of a more impressive younger defensive player that I've seen on Oregon and, you know, since I started covering the team in 2014, just the mixture of what he was able to do in the secondary, the leadership. And then he was just absolutely electric on the punt return too. I mean, it's not just the athleticism, but just reading and patience that I think he's going to be, he could be Oregon's best player on the team when it's all said and done. As for the true freshman, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau, the one that we had talked about all offseason, he didn't make much of an impact that game, but the one player that I was pretty blown, not blown away with, but just very impressed was Mace Funa at outside linebacker. This was a kid This Auburn game was the first football game he's played in two seasons. He missed all last year after knee surgery. At one point, he had ballooned up to like 280 pounds, and he's dropped all of that. He's gotten in shape, and man, he was giving people problems in that game. So I was very impressed with the way he played, especially from the fact that he didn't get here in the spring. He came here in fall camp, and it's been a very accelerated process for him. So I think Mace Funa is definitely the freshman that you go like, oh, okay, this kid can play.
So Nevada's their next game. Who is their final non-conference, Tyson?
Just this big juggernaut from the FCS, the Montana Grizzlies.
Tyson's Montana Grizzlies. Tyson's, man.
That's right. Okay. That's right, because I saw your tweet, and you're like, trips off to a great start. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so presumably they've got two games. They should be 2-1 going into conference play. What is Tyson Alger, though, looking for in the next two games? They might win both these games by 30 each. What are you looking for to maybe see that Oregon learned from it and then also is maybe more ready for conference play this season?
I want one more than anything. I just want to see them be healthy. I think more than anything that this team just needs to get to the Stanford game healthy, whether it's those receivers or who else, you know, one thing that I think gets overlooked in this game is, again, Cam McCormick missed it, as he missed much of last season, and this kid is a beast in run blocking. And that's kind of leads into the other thing. I just want to see this running game get going. That was such a bad second half for that running game after we talked about how well CJ Verdell and Travis Dye played during their freshman year, and they did. And one game shouldn't be an example of what's to come for the entire season. But they have to get this running game going, or else, you know, if some of these receivers are hurt, that's going to be way too much pressure put on Herbert to win these games. And not that I'm worried that Nevada or Montana could beat anybody in the country. I'm not worried in these two games, but you just want to see them get into a rhythm and maybe just show kind of some bravado and confidence out there. Like be the team that sets the tempo and shows that, hey, like, we may have lost that Auburn game, but we still think that we're Pac-12 crown caliber. We think that we should be playing for a big, big bowl game at the end of the season. Just have some of that swagger that we haven't quite seen in quite some time here.
Yeah. Tyson Alger, theathletic.com is where you can find his work, a beat writer covering for the Ducks for a few years now. He's a good friend of the show. Also has It Never Rains podcast that goes down with him and Fentress, if you guys want to check that out as well. Tyson, thanks so much for joining us on this Labor Day. We appreciate it, man, and we'll catch up soon.
Hey, thanks, guys. Always love coming on here.
Absolutely. There we go. Good stuff from Tyson Alger, his breakdown of the Oregon and Auburn game. Well, let's dive into it. I got a few more thoughts into all the things people are talking about that we didn't bring up in the first segment. So we'll get to those things next on The Fan. All right, let's try to tackle this because we have the NFL whip around, and then I want to get to the Oregon State game as well. I want to try to tackle something that I was thinking about on Saturday night after the game.
Okay, let's tackle it together.
Because I have two opinions, and I think it's very easy to say that both are right.
Yeah.
And right now there seems to be this within the Oregon fan base, and I think within Pac-12 /football fans who listen to this show and watch football on a regular basis, there's like two camps that people are in, and I keep looking at them both, and I'm like, good point. Good point. Good point.
You're
Wait,
right.
Good point.
Wait, you're right, too. Wait, you're both right.
You guys are both right.
Uh-oh.
And I want your thoughts on this, genuinely, because we've never really jumped into this this season, obviously, with the first game. The Marcus Arroyo stuff and then Justin Herbert stuff. Okay, so there's obviously criticism on Herbert, and there's a lot of criticism on Arroyo. I think there's an element to where the both are right. Now, what I mean by that, what I saw a lot on social media following that Duck game was, boy, be aggressive. Why don't they put the ball in Herbert's hands? What is he doing? That's a fair point.
Sure.
And then I look at the box score, and 18 of the last 24 plays were pass plays.
They threw the ball 21 times in the second half. When they went up 21-6, so they got a stop on the opening drive of the third quarter. It was 14-6. Right. They got a stop, and Oregon scored on their opening drive of the second half to go up 21-6. And it felt like that's a big momentum play. After they scored to go up 21-6, of their next 8 offensive plays, seven of them were passes.
Right, and I think you can also counter that and go, okay, Sprague, well, you're right. He gave Herbert the ball a ton at the end of the game. But when he called run plays, they weren't creative. 4th and 1, what was that? That was a loss of 3 yards.
That was a terrible play call.
3rd and 7, CJ Verdell draw. What are we doing here? You know what? Those are very good points. But my overall point with this is, I think you're both right. And I think there's absolutely criticism that goes on Herbert. You know, there were possessions where it's like he's just throwing four-yard passes. Now, I'm not seeing the whole field like you got to see him. I know that he didn't have all his guys. But you also know how the business can be that, like, oh, doesn't matter. You're the quarterback. You got to go win that game. The Hail Mary pass was great, like 20 yards over.
Yeah, that's inexcusable.
Got to give your team a chance there. Yeah. I think my overall point, Dirt, is I don't know if there is a win situation for Marcus Arroyo this year. I think a lot of people have made their mind up about him.
Sure.
And if they would have won that game, they would have come and said, well, he learned. He got it. But as soon as they lost, it was Marcus Arroyo sucks. See, he's a terrible play caller. Yeah. Justin Herbert, very similarly, doesn't have his weapons. And then he also, there's moments and times where he just kind of disappears. And you're like, do they have the best quarterback?
Yeah.
I think both are right.
They're both right, and that's the funny part. I think you went in with an opinion on both of them before the game, and you look for things to validate your opinion. And when the game ends the way that it did, if you have the opinion that Herbert's way overhyped and I don't understand any of it, and if Marcus Arroyo is a terrible offensive coordinator, the way the second half went, you found things and reasons to validate your opinion while both showed you flashes of what they're capable of. I thought the game plan in the first half from Arroyo was really solid. I thought their ability to control the line of scrimmage, taking advantage of the running game, he found open wide receivers. Herbert was dialed in. He was, I think, 8 of 9 for 108 yards and a touchdown, or 8 of 10 for 109 yards and a touchdown in the first half, and it should have been 9 of 10 for a few more yards and two touchdowns because one of those two incompletions in the first quarter was a drop ball in the end zone. So they both showed, again, flashes are what they're capable of. It got back to the issue of putting it together for four quarters. The biggest issue I saw in the second half is that there's a blame to go around completely. By that, what I mean is you're right on Herbert disappearing at times and making bad plays. Throwing a Hail Mary out of the back of the end zone is inexcusable. I don't care how good you are, how long you've been around. Like, that's the only thing you can't do when you throw a Hail Mary.
I don't mean to interrupt you. When he threw that from your vantage point in the stadium,
you knew it was going on immediately.
Okay, because on TV, he threw it and we were like, oh, dude, you're only 30 yards out. What
he chucked it and we like, what? I also yelled that when he threw the touchdown pass to Spencer Webb, though, to be fair. What are you doing? And then it was a touchdown.
Yeah.
The criticism there is fine. Herbert had a couple of moments where you just scratch your head in terms of on 3rd and 14, he threw a 5-yard in to Jalen Redd, who was tackled for a 6-yard gain. You just have to understand the time, the distance, the situation. Why are you throwing a 5-yard pass? I get there's a muddy pocket around you. I get you don't have a lot of time, but it's almost at that point better to hold it and try and take a sack or make something else happen. You don't want to force one into double coverage, but throwing a ball 5 yards on 3rd and 14 won't accomplish anything. So he deserves criticism for moments of that game, as does Marcus Arroyo. There's no doubt about it. The game plan started out great. The issue that you saw in the second half was what Oregon dealt with all of last year. And by that, I mean, in the first half, Auburn came in thinking we're from the SEC, we're big, they're not as big as us. They didn't blitz, they didn't stack the box, they thought they would be able to control the line of scrimmage. Guess what? They couldn't. Oregon's offensive line lived up to the hype. They dominated the line of scrimmage. They ran the ball at will.
Justin, how about the fourth down touchdown
call? They steamrolled into the end zone. Justin Herbert had all day to throw the ball. They could not get any pressure on him, and they were picking apart the Auburn defense. Despite the two mistakes that they made, they should have scored 28 points in the first half without those. The Oregon offense dominated the first half. What happened in the second half is what happened last year, and that is they said, okay, Oregon doesn't have any legitimate threats on the outside. Johnny Johnson made some nice catches. Jalen Redd made some nice catches. That's fine. Why are we giving these guys so much space? We're going to jam them at the line of scrimmage. Oregon clearly is able to control us at the line, so we're going to put 9 guys in the box to stop the run, and we're going to blitz the crap out of him to make sure he doesn't have any time to throw the football. And in the second half, you had guys that couldn't get any separation on the outside. You couldn't run the football because Auburn had 9 guys in the box, and I don't care how good your offensive line is, you're not going to be able to run against that. And Herbert had no time to throw because Auburn was consistently blitzing. And this is where the million-dollar question still exists for me. I was so frustrated by some of the conservative play calls, running it on 3rd and 7, the short completion on 3rd and 14, the running the ball on 4th and 1 when you're 9 yards behind the line of scrimmage and the pistol and a backup quarterback and they know what's coming. Like, a lot of that was frustrating. The catch-22 to that is what happens in that second half if you have legitimate dudes on the outside. If you have guys that say, all right, you want to stack us at the line of scrimmage, you want to blitz, you want to get after us, and you're going to play man-on-man defense on the outside, we have a Micah Pittman that's going to make you pay. We have a Juwan Johnson that we're going to lob a ball up to, and you're not going to be able to defend it because he's bigger and stronger than you, a la Auburn's final touchdown.
Right.
That, to me, is the million. It's tough, and blame deserves to go all around for what happened when you blow a game like that. The coaching wasn't great. The players weren't great. It's a multifaceted thing, but until Oregon gets healthy, it's hard to get a complete understanding of what they are on offense.
Well, okay. First of all, I also think it's very fair. I'm not telling you people should be going crazy out there. We got a few examples here of second half coaching stuff that's starting to really seep in there. And if they have one more game, Stanford, UW, where they're leading, and it's not all the way comfortable, but everybody's kind of like, hey, Oregon's clearly the better team here, and you blow it, oh boy, crystal ball, not going to be a big fan of the media at that point because it's not going to be good headlines, mm-hmm. columns, interviews.
There was an article on Yahoo this weekend about how much Mario Cristobal's holding them back because he doesn't understand how to control the clock late in the game.
I mean, I don't know. He's not calling the plays, right? So I don't know how much of this, and this comes from an area of never playing major college football. I don't know how much is in the coach's hands versus the coordinators versus collective staff efforts.
And every staff's different, by the way, in that regard, too.
I thought the timeout thing was a pretty terrible look for him.
From start to finish. They called a timeout before they ran a play.
Yeah.
Like, you have that play scripted. You don't do that.
They called back-to-back timeouts, lost their timeouts with, what was it, 10 minutes left?
No. There was probably four, because that was on the fourth down play. So,
oh, you're right, on the fourth and one. Okay, thank you.
But still, I mean, what are you doing?
You call back-to-back timeouts to get Herbert in. He couldn't go in, and then you still drew up that play, and it was like a 3-yard
loss. Auburn knew what was coming, and they stuffed it.
So I think that stuff is real, but it's funny to hear what you just said, right? Let's all take a moment of, let's take a breath, right? You're very angry your team lost that game. I get it. If that was my team, I'd be pissed too. But what you just described, I don't know what he does. Now, he's paid a lot more money to figure that out as the offensive coordinator.
Yes, he is.
But when defenses make these adjustments that you're pointing out, and now you've got 9 in a box on a run,
so you can't run the ball.
You've got corner and safety help on really run-of-the-mill, kind of just middle-of-the-pack wide receivers that aren't first-teamers by any means.
And Auburn's got legitimate defensive backs. They're going to shut down Johnny Johnson and Jalen Redd.
And then 18 of his last 24 are called pass plays. Folks, I don't think one person listening has an answer to that. What do you do? What do you do? If Jason Sukanik or Cam Kleon were sitting here and we did the same thing, I don't even think they would have an answer, because I think that's the tough part. You can throw out the word creativity, but really you're throwing the word around because you're like, well, it's different. Creativity is not a given that their offense is suddenly working. And by the way, how creative can you get before Auburn's like, yeah, you guys aren't doing that anymore.
Yeah.
So I think you give credit, obviously, to Auburn in the comeback attempt. The other part is, I just don't know, when you face good teams like this with good 4- or 5-star talent, that's the concerning part, I think, for Oregon that you would circle is, until you see healthy wideouts who prove they can catch and not drop passes,
that are on the same level as those defenders,
that are on that level, I don't know how Marcus Arroyo makes anybody happy. And I'm not even trying to cape up for him. He had a lot of bad blunders in that
game.
Oh, he
had a terrible second half. But again, it just gets back to, I don't like pointing it at a singular thing and saying that's the reason they lost
that
the game.
It really felt like, to me, Dirt, like a complete collective loss.
Yes, if you're going to blow a game like that, it takes the entire team to do it, players and coaches included, and that's what happened in the second half.
That defense on that last play by Bo Nix even was like, did the DB even
If he turns his head, he was right in position to make a play, and maybe he picks it off, but he didn't turn around. He panicked in the moment, touchdown, and that was a breakdown defensively. You know what else was a breakdown defensively? On Auburn's first touchdown of the game, Thomas Graham, there was nobody guarding the wide receiver. He ran in as a sub, coming into the package. He ran to the middle of the field, asking around what the defense was, not realizing that there's a wideout standing there and there was nobody guarding him. And Bo Nix had the wherewithal. It was supposed to be a run play. He hiked it and just threw it to him. That's how Auburn scored their first touchdown, which again gets back to the timeouts. Instead of blowing timeouts before the game starts or not knowing a rule or blowing a timeout to avoid a delay in a game and then still kicking the ball into the end zone, how about you use a timeout in that situation when you realize you got a wide receiver standing by himself on one side of the field? That's how Auburn officially got on the board in the third or fourth quarter. That's how they got their first touchdown. The reality about Oregon's offense is I just don't think we're going to get an accurate picture until those wide receivers come back, because I think that's how you alleviate a lot of that, is having a guy like Micah Pittman on the outside that can create separation and can go out and make plays. And it doesn't matter how tightly you cover him, he's going to be the guy that's going to beat you. And then it makes Justin Herbert's life easier. And the other positive that Oregon will have going for it moving forward, you're not going to play a defense as good as Auburn's the rest of the year. Auburn did not have a good offense outside of the running game. Bo Nix did not play well outside of the final touchdown pass of the game. He could use his legs a little bit, but he played like a freshman is supposed to play.
That Whitlow kid was good.
The Whitlow kid was good. They ran the ball successfully in the second half, but you're not going to play like Washington's got a good defense. Utah's got a good defense. You're not going to play one that's better than Auburn's the rest of the year. And that's one thing at least you can lean on moving forward.
Yeah, somebody says if you're up 28-3, wouldn't have been much of an issue. That's the thing, though, guys.
Well, yeah.
They should have had one more touchdown against Stanford. They didn't. They should have had one more touchdown against Auburn. They didn't. Like,
and then what's the criticism with play calling and time management?
Yeah.
That's the point.
Precisely.
And that's where I think you need to spread the blame around to everybody.
I think everybody can point to Justin Herbert today. Everybody can point to Mario Cristobal. You can point to Marcus Arroyo. I think maybe the only guy I wouldn't point to really is even Andy Avalos, because I think his defense was put in a terrible situation and they had a good game plan going for most of that game. So, so there's our first breakdowns of the Oregon game. We'll do it again in the final hour. Coming up in the second, it is packed with a lot more college football, but we're going to start with our NFL whip around. The NFL starts this Thursday, Chicago and Green Bay. A lot of cuts and big storylines in the NFL. Hour two straight ahead on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.